WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It is the 24th of February, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. I'm going to start the show off with episode 634 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Winesome Widow Matter, that had an original air date of the 26th of April, 1959. Thanks.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is long distance. Mr. Pat McCracken in Hartford, Connecticut is returning your call, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks, operator. Put him on.
One moment, please.
Hello?
Hi, Pat.
Oh, Johnny. Hey, this message I found. Boy, I'm glad you called. Say, what under the sun are you doing in Los Angeles?
Just down here for a confab with Jack Johnstone. You know, the guy who dramatizes the cases I handle and puts them on the air.
Yeah, yeah. Give him my best.
And I just wondered if you had anything out here I can do before heading back to Hartford.
And if so, it'll give you a chance to put your travel charges on the expense account. Hmm?
What else?
Well, Johnny, I got a wire from him just a few minutes ago. You contact Herb Schilling at the Greater Southwest Insurance Company right there in L.A.
Okay, will do.
And you can address your expense account to them.
Right.
Oh, Johnny?
Yeah?
Have you got a gun with you?
Sure, Pat, I always... Huh? Why do you ask that?
Well, judging by Herb's wire, Johnny, you may need it.
Bob Bailey, in the exciting adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
A young lady by the name of Scheherazade kept her audience of one enthralled for 1,001 nights with one of the longest stories in history. That's a long time to devote to one chronicle, but some of CBS Radio's winning 7 weekday dramas have put that record in the shade, entertaining audiences in the millions with many times 1,001 days of continuing dramatic serials. Each weekday on the CBS Radio Network, there's a wealth of daytime drama, including such outstanding serials as The Romance of Helen Trent, The Couple Next Door, Ma Perkins, Whispering Streets, The Right to Happiness, The Second Mrs. Burton, and Young Dr. Malone. Monday through Friday, follow these absorbing, true-to-life stories. Only CBS Radio brings you the winning 7 combination of top daytime dramas. Another important reason for the different sound of this CBS radio station. And now, Act 1 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Greater Southwest Insurance Company, Los Angeles office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Winsome Widow matter. Expense account item one, $1.40 for a taxi from my hotel in West L.A. to Greater Southwest Insurance at one of those big office buildings on Wilshire Boulevard's Miracle Mile. Herb Schilling almost fell off his chair when I barged in on him.
Dollar.
Hiya, Herbie.
Look, I know that some of those new jet flights are pretty fast, but I only sent that wire to Pat McCracken a couple of hours ago.
I didn't waste any time trying to make plane connections, Herb. Just flew out under my own power.
Yeah. You're kidding, I know. But where were you when you got the word from McCracken?
Right here in your own fair city.
Oh, I wish I'd known that. Even those couple of hours could have been saved.
Oh? What's the big problem?
A little matter of a liquor store holdup. Only I'm afraid this one wasn't so little.
Then tell me all.
Yeah, sit down. Johnny, for some reason or another, these places that sell bottle goods are a pretty frequent target for stick-ups. Here in Los Angeles, there have been quite a few of them over the years.
I'm surprised you insure them.
And needless to say, premiums are pretty high. And at least so far as our company's concerned, the policies are somewhat limited. That is, insofar as maximum allowable coverage is concerned.
Makes sense.
On the whole, we've been pretty lucky. By that, I mean we've had to pay off relatively few claims. But now, in the case of Willie Lehman...
Who's Willie Lehman?
His store is out in West Los Angeles at 10921 Santa Monica Boulevard.
And that's only about a mile from where I'm staying.
And the old man opened up his place late in 1951.
Oh?
Yes, 61. Early in 1952, he had his first holdup. The bandits got away with something over $900. So he bought some insurance from us.
Well, go on.
Since then, there have been 7 more attempted stick-ups there.
A total of 8 in as many years, huh?
Yeah.
Then your company must be getting a bit tired of paying off.
No, because after the second time...
He, know how to use it?
He certainly did. He had a lot of medals from some German outfit he was in during the last war. Anyhow, he suffered no more losses. That is, until last night.
Oh, how much?
In money.
What else?
Something like over $400 out of the cash register, as nearly as the police can figure from the register slip.
Well, couldn't Lehman tell you how much?
No. Because you see, Johnny, he also lost his life.
Oh. And I take it you wrote his life insurance, too.
That's right. $30,000.
I see.
Look, it's a little late in the day, but you want to go out there and check with the police?
Sure. I'll be in touch. Item 2, $50, deposit on a drive-your-own car. I passed up 10921 Santa Monica Boulevard and went right on out west to West L.A. Police Headquarters. There I ran down Sergeant Mike Kirby, who was covering the whole affair. Mike turned out to be a young, alert guy on the ball and completely cooperative.
That's right, Dollar. 8 times since he opened the place in 51. And that's way out of line.
Yeah, I should certainly think so.
And the last 3 stick-ups have been within the past 10 weeks.
Sergeant, my contact at the insurance company, Herb Schilling, tells me that Willie Lehman managed to fight off most of the bandits.
He told you right, Dollar. Lehman was not only a crack shot, but I guess he was pretty quick on the draw. It was only last month that he killed one of the 2 men that tried to hold him up.
2 men? What about the other?
I'm way ahead of you.
Huh?
We find that other man, we find the killer. Probably.
It seemed like a pretty safe bet. But look, Mike... If there were so many tries at this one place, and so many all at once...
Stakeout?
Sure, somebody watching over the place.
We tried it. As long as we had somebody there, you know, sitting in the back or working behind the counter or just watching from across the street, nothing happened. But the minute we took them away, bing, another hold-up try. Somehow they seemed to know whenever we had the place under surveillance.
And more important, when you didn't. Well, what have you got to work on?
Oh, nothing but a couple of bullets, I'm afraid. Want to take a run over and look at the place?
Sure, Mike. Why not? The liquor store was closed, but there were lights on in the living quarters above it. We knocked a couple of times, but got no answer, so Mike used a key that he had. He and his men had been careful to leave things as they'd been at the time of the killing.
He was lying right there, Dollar, as though he'd come around the end of the counter.
Near that door to the back room, huh?
Yeah. That door also leads upstairs to the apartment. He must have taken a couple of shots at the bandit. You see where the bottles were broken over on the shelf?
Yeah.
No bloodstains or anything. I guess he missed for once. But not the bandit. Caught him right in the heart, Johnny. Bullet went in at the right shoulder, then down through his heart and stopped against the lower left rib.
Of course, until you get a lab report on that bullet.
Well, it must be his wife. The wife, she didn't answer when we knocked on the door. Good evening, Mrs. Lehman.
Oh, no. Are you here again? Gee, Sergeant, do you have to come around at all hours?
Oops. Hold everything. Lehman had been 61, but his wife, Gloria, couldn't have been more than 30. Tall, dark, she was obviously very proud of her highly commendable figure. And she was pretty. That is, almost. Maybe it was just a little too much makeup, especially around the eyes, that she knew how to use so well. A little bell had rung in the back of my head. Yeah. And since I'd noticed a phone booth at the gas station next door, item 3, 10 cents for a call.
Johnny.
That's right, Herb, and I'm sorry to call you at home.
That's all right, Johnny.
But there's one thing I forgot to ask you about when I talked to you.
Yeah, what's that?
Who's the beneficiary of old man Lehman's life insurance?
Why, his wife, Gloria, Johnny.
Thank you, Herb Schilling.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. When Fidel Castro was biding his time in a remote fastness in Cuba, only a network like the CBS radio network had the equipment and manpower to go in and bring out the background of his revolutionary movement, his own words on what was to come and how it would come about. When major news breaks anywhere in the world, only a network like CBS Radio has correspondents on the scene or within short range. Only news like CBS News is global in scope and is up to the minute as a direct report from on the scene. That's why millions prefer CBS News on CBS Radio and its affiliated stations to every other reporting medium for speed, for accuracy. Remember, when the story's big, only a news-gathering force like ours can scoop it up and send it slicing through space to your set, packaged for immediate delivery. Get it first, and get it right. Make CBS News on CBS Radio your listening post on the world. And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Winsome Widow Matter.
After the phone call to Herb Schilling, I went back into the liquor store where Sergeant Mike Kirby was still talking to Lehman's widow, Gloria.
You mean you don't plan to reopen the store at all, Mrs. Lehman?
Not if I can help it. I'll sell this dump to the first person I find has enough money to buy it.
And then what, Mrs. Lehman?
Why don't you call me Gloria, huh? Everybody else does. And who are you, anyway, Johnny? You aren't a cop, and you don't look like a dick.
Well, thanks.
Mr. Dollar's here because of the insurance involved.
From the insurance company?
That's right.
Well, listen, Willie had some insurance.
I know.
I mean, on himself, as well as the store. I don't know how much it is, but he promised me that he'd buy some.
It was your idea that he insure his life?
Sure, an old guy like him. I figured he'd up and die sometime while I was still young and beautiful, so why shouldn't I let him provide something for my future, like they say? Well, whoever thought he was going to die as soon as this?
Whoever planned and carried out his murder?
You mean somebody planned to kill him this way?
Just where were you when it happened, Gloria?
I was upstairs in bed, asleep. Look, I've told the cops all about it.
Well, you must have heard the shooting.
I'll say I did.
And what did you do?
Well, I put on a robe and come running down here. Well, I see the cash register open and poor old Willie laying there. And when I see that he's dead, I phone the police.
You didn't see anybody else down here?
Well, by the time I got here, whoever did it was gone.
You don't seem at all upset over your husband's murder.
You want me to put on an act? Don't you know that he was twice as old as I am?
Then why did you marry him?
Well, you know how it is. A chance to settle down and let somebody else support you for a change. Made him happy to have me around, and I guess I liked it okay, too, for a while. But gee, what a bore. All he did was talk about getting enough money to go back to the old country. Well, who wants to go back to any old country when you can have such a ball in this one? I know I always have, even when I was married to old Willie. Of course, he just didn't always know where I was half the time. Don't you like having fun, Johnny? Hmm? I mean, with people more like your own age, hmm? How old are you, Johnny? Now, don't answer it. Now, don't answer it. The place is closed.
Well, it might be for me, Mrs. Lehman.
Oh, yeah.
Kirby. Yeah?
And listen, Johnny.
Oh.
If you can get me that insurance money in a hurry, well...
Yeah, good.
I'll want you to know I appreciate it.
Gloria, how long ago were you married to Willie Lehman?
Last September.
Yeah.
Oh?
Now, why do you say it that way?
Okay,
I told you, Johnny, I married
the
old man so he could take care of me.
Excuse me, Johnny, I got to get back to headquarters. Ballistics downtown is sending up a report on the bullets we found.
Oh, good.
Also, Bob Golden picked up a bum in a saloon, and it looks like he's the one that did this job.
They picked up the guy that killed Willie?
Looks like it. You want to come with me, Johnny? Well, do you or don't you?
Yeah, Mike. I'll go along with you.
I told you. I told all those other cops. I'm the guy that heisted the dough out of Lehman's Liquors last night.
Then you shot and killed him, Benny.
Oh, no. No, I tell you, I didn't do it. That's the truth. So help me, that's the truth.
Are you trying to say somebody else went in there and shot him after you left, Benny?
Well, I don't know.
There was no reason if you'd already taken his money.
I don't know. How should I know? You think I stuck around there after I got his dough?
How many shots did you fire at him, Benny?
How many shots? Why, I didn't fire none. You saw that gun the cops took off of me. It was made of rubber. That's all it was. It was made of rubber. If I hadn't got stupid and gone out and got drunk and showed it to somebody and told them how I got away with the money from that liquor store with it, you think these dumb cops had ever got wise to me?
You didn't fire a single shot.
How could I? I wave my rubber gun at him. He reaches under the counter. He comes up empty, so he gives me the dough and I leave.
You're lying, Benny.
You make a paraffin test, Mike.
Yeah, and I think this is the result of it. Well, Conroy?
The paraffin test was negative, Sergeant. No sign of powder on either of his hands. Also, Sergeant...
Yeah, you see? I told you I never had no real gun.
Also, all right, Benny.
I told you all I did was rob that joint.
Shut up,
Benny.
What
do you want me to
shut up?
Yeah, Conroy? Also, Sergeant, here's the report from downtown on the bullets from Ballista.
Good, yeah, let me have them.
And also, they returned that gun of Mr. Lehman's that they found beside his body. There's no prints at all on it. Now,
Johnny,
is there anything else?
Hey, look at this. Yeah?
Conroy?
Yes?
Get this bum out of here. Lock him up upstairs.
Yes, sir. Come on, Benny.
You wise guys can't pin no murder rap on me. You wait till I get a lawyer.
Oh, yeah, we'll wait.
What's it say, Mike? Listen. The bullet that killed Willie Lehman and the bullets we pulled out of the wall of that store.
Huh?
Johnny, they all came from Lehman's own gun.
Well, how about that?
In other words, with the help of that phony rubber pistol, Benny somehow got Lehman's gun away from him. Maybe Lehman had already pulled off a couple of shots and missed, but the one that killed him...
Oh.
Yeah.
The paraffin test showed no powder on Benny's hands.
Then he must have worn gloves. He must have killed Lehman.
You want to bet?
Then who did? Well, first, I think I'd better get some proof.
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. When friends drop in, let your hospitality show you're sociable in the modern manner. Pepsi, you know, is the favorite of the smart and young at heart.
Be sociable, look smart, keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay young and fair and debonair.
Have you tried a Pepsi lately? Now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Listen, Mike, you're overlooking one thing.
Like what, Johnny?
That Benny's a shaky old bum, a wino. Suppose he'd gone into that liquor store with a real gun instead of that phony little rubber one you boys found on him.
Well?
You think for a minute he could have stood up against a crack shot like you say Lehman was?
Well, now, that's besides...
Of course not. Now, could he get Lehman's gun away from him and kill him with it? Ever since he kept the gun in that store, not a single hold-up man has got the better of him. He even killed one of them a month ago.
That's very true.
All right. Now, I think I can get your killer for you. Only you have to let me get her my own way.
Her?
That's right.
You mean Lehman's wife, Gloria?
That's right.
Johnny, I thought of her, too. Motive, opportunity, everything. But proof.
Let me handle it my own way.
But if she didn't do it...
If I'm wrong, it won't be any reflection on you, on your record.
Oh. I see what you mean.
Okay. We'll take my car. And you got to promise me one thing.
What's that?
That you'll stay outside, that you won't make any move until I ask you to, no matter what happens.
Well, now, Johnny...
Otherwise, you can try hauling her in yourself. But, of course, if you're wrong about it.
Okay, Johnny, let's go.
Well, I'm glad you came along, Johnny. I'm getting awful tired of having all those cops around here.
All right, listen, Gloria.
And you are going to get that $30,000 insurance money for me in a hurry, aren't you? You know how long it'll take for me to get the rest of his stuff here in this state. A guy dies, it's sometimes a couple of years before they... What's the matter, Johnny?
$30,000, huh?
What?
I thought you didn't know the amount of that insurance.
Well, Johnny...
Gloria, the only recent attempts at a holdup were made between the times the cops had a stakeout here, right?
Yes, that's right, Johnny.
Then somebody must have passed the word around when everything was clear.
You think so? Gee, that's...
Yeah, and I also think that the only people who knew when the police weren't here were you and your husband.
Well, you don't think he'd go around blabbing it?
No, I don't.
Well, then... Now, wait a minute, Johnny Dollar.
Don't get your back hair up, Gloria. Not yet.
What?
Your husband was good enough with a gun to have thwarted 7 robbery attempts in a row.
That's right.
So I think he could have prevented his own murder if he'd had his gun last night.
Well, of course he had it. They found it laying next to his body.
Somebody was glad to see these holdups, these attempts anyway, because it provided a perfect excuse to kill him.
Now, listen,
Johnny.
He kept
the gun under the counter, didn't he?
Sure. Right here, under the register.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to put my gun there.
What are you up to, Johnny?
Get behind the counter a minute. About where he'd stand when a customer came in.
Well, sure. Right about here.
So last night, a man came in and he stood about here. He pulled a toy gun out of his pocket, demanded the money in the register.
What is this?
What would your husband have done? Well...
Grab the gun. Like this.
You're pointing that right at me, you know.
That's what you would have done.
But there was no gun there last night. Because you had taken it. And when the bandits left, you were standing up on the stairs there at the back. You'd come down from your apartment.
What are you talking about?
The bullet that killed him went from his right shoulder down to his heart, down to the lower ribs, because you were up on the stairs when you shot him. Then you fired a couple of shots into the wall and you call the police.
You can prove that, Johnny, enough for the cops.
When I tell them, Gloria...
But you won't, Johnny, because it happened just the way you said. But you're never going to tell them.
Gloria!
Too late, Johnny! No! 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 You took the bullets up! You tricked me! You tricked me!
That's right, Gloria.
Dirty, double-crossing! You lying cheat!
You happy, Sergeant? Pretty obvious, I guess, right from the beginning. But as I said, getting proof, or in this case, a confession, isn't always so easy. Anyhow, expense account total, including mileage on the rental car and the trip back to Hartford, I'll call it 250 even. Okay? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Can you get premium gasoline performance at regular gasoline price? Find out what so many other car owners have found. In 3 out of 5 cars, regular priced Sinclair Dino gasoline matches performance of premium gasolines, saves you up to 4 cents a gallon. Almost anywhere you see the Sinclair sign, you can save up to 4 cents a gallon with Dino and still get premium performance and mileage. Drive with care and buy Sinclair Dino Gasoline. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is written by Jack Johnstone, produced and directed by Fred Hendrickson. Johnny Dollar is played by Mandel Kramer. Also featured in our cast were Jackson Beck, Joseph Julian, Jack Grimes, Bob Maxwell, and Peter Fernandez. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Walter Otto. Tomorrow begins a new week's hilarity with Arthur Godfrey Time on the CBS Radio Network.
Coping 19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
Managing today's uncertainty can be overwhelming. We crave security, and it's uncomfortable when we sense a lack of control over our lives. Develop a routine for a more balanced lifestyle with healthy habits and fun. Focus on what you can control, even if it's little things, like a before bedtime ritual.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Thank you, Ad Council. The first half of the program, we've heard yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Winesome Widow Matter. It says here it had an original air date of the 26th of April, 1959, starring Mandel Kramer as Johnny Dollar, but the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio has him slated as Johnny Dollar from June of 1961 to September of 1962. I'm not so sure, but he sounds like Bob Bailey. Sometimes with these old-time radio programs, there are some inconsistencies and reference points. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio in Medford. For the second half of the program, I'm going to try and capture two birds with one seed. This is episode 45 of Destination Freedom in honor of Black History Month and the start of baseball. We're going to hear the Ballad of Satchel Paige. Destination Freedom was created and written by Richard Durham. It was at a repertory company that was all Black performers. I believe they were out of Detroit, Chicago. They'll let you know. This had an original air date of the 15th of May, 1949. Thanks.
Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic heritage of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. When the story of America's national sport is written, there has got to be in it one chapter from the fabulous career of the world champion Cleveland Indians pitching ace Satchel Paige. Today, Destination Freedom will play that chapter entitled The Ballad of Satchel Paige.
Nobody knows when he first played on a baseball field. Some say he put out Caesar when old Julius tried to steal. Some say he learned about curves watching Antony's Cleopatra. But it ain't no truth in the story that Methuselah was his catcher. Oh, Satchel Paige, nobody dared to bother about his age, 'cause he was the best pitcher that the good Lord ever made.
Case history of the legend starts this way. Mobile, a kid named Leroy Paige, roamed like a tumbleweed through the streets. Pitched bricks or tin cans on back fences when he played hooky from Oakdale High back near the bay. Struck out scrawny kids in sandlot ball games. Built a pitching arm and played against pro players who strayed down to the rough south side of town and sent them scurrying off with wild tales of a kid who had a baseball trained like a hawk. It could tear the heart out of home plate. Stood 6'3" in his stocking feet. Could bend back like bamboo. Could dust ash off a smoker cigar with a brick at 60 feet. And when he was 16 summers old, he heard about a baseball team in Chattanooga that was open to Negro ball players. And one hot day, he pointed his long, lean, size 14s toward Tennessee. And he went a-treading over Lookout Mountain, down toward the ballpark in the valley. Tales went a-spreading ahead of him.
Over Lookout Mountain, his feet were a-treading, and ahead of his feet, the tales started spreading about a pitching man over 6 foot tall who had learned how to throw the atomic ball. To Chattanooga town went Satchel the dangling. To Lookout Park was where he was the angling. Now the baseball boss whose name was Bailey, had heard their tales, and he argued daily with his coach Sam that they were not true. But the coach just grinned. There was something he knew, and he turned to Boss Bailey, about to say something sage, when over the mountain trod Big Statue Page.
They say that's the way he come down on that Chattanooga ballpark. He walked on the field, walked around the field, walked across the field, and stopped in front of Boss Bailey.
Hey, Coach.
Yes, sir, Mr. Bailey.
Who's this scarecrow?
Oh, well, he comes from a little scrub team in Alabama. His name's Page. He pitches.
These Hicks have more fair stories about ballplayers than the law allows. Don't know baseball from a sweet potato. Hey, you.
Page is the name. Leroy Page.
And what might be your profession?
I'm a pitcher, like you said.
I need a pitcher, but you ain't the one.
Well, I can catch him bat.
The only catcher bat I'd ever hire would be Josh Gibson. You Josh Gibson?
No, sir.
Who recommended you anyhow?
Well, folks around home, mostly. I got the surprising kind of pitching, they say. They
look,
said...
Look, kid. Look, professional baseball ain't no game for you. I know you grew up reading about Casey at the bat instead of your rightful nursery rhymes. Right now, you ain't even a decent juvenile delinquent. Now, blow.
I'd sure like to help your team.
Best way is to get a job on our rival's team. Now, beat it.
Just a minute, Mr. Bailey.
Yeah?
Well, I own a part of the stock in this team, too.
What are you getting at?
Well, they say this kid here can pitch.
You say that to say what?
I bet you my share of the team's stock against yours. He'll do all right in a tryout.
Oh, soft-hearted, soft-headed coach. If you take stock in tall tales, I shouldn't mind taking over your stock in the team. All right, Sage or Cage or whatever they call you, grab a glove, go to the bullpen and warm up.
Don't need no warming, mister. I stay hot.
Oh, don't even know the physiology of the game. Well, see if you can find your way out on the mound.
All right, sir. I'll do my best.
Hey, Coach, tell all the players to knock off and stand around. I'm going to see that this hick gets his fill of baseball. Get me Hank.
Sure, sure, Chief. Hey, Hank. Hey, home run, Hank. The boss wants you.
What's pitching, boss?
That screwball on the mound there wants to give somebody batting practice. Oblige him, will you?
I'll shoot line drive straight at his head, boss.
No, you just play with him somewhat. Give the team a little relaxation.
Sure, boss. I know just what he needs.
Yeah, that hick needs a pitching good fit. Give it to him.
Go give that hick a pitching good fit was that old boss man's cry. Knock that pitcher out of his box and I'll laugh until I die. The coach went down in the dugout and he dug up the team's best catcher. Then just for safety's first he measured Satch and got a stretcher. But not young Satch, no, he stood out on the mound with one arm on his hip and the other dangling down near the ground. And the ball players laughed like they had themselves a fit, while the catcher put on his guard and grabbed his catcher's mitt.
Hey, come on, pitcher, quick throw.
Come on, pitcher, I'll show you why they call me Home Run Hank.
And Satch bent way back just like a stick of bamboo. Why, he looked like a hairpin or a standing horseshoe. One long foot kicked a hole in the sky, the other held the ground. Then he must have pitched that blazing ball, cause there was a whistling sound.
Hey, what happened?
I didn't see that.
The bamboo stick had straightened up, and it stood still and surveyed the damage. They say the bat had been knocked down by the breeze and the catcher was stone cold from the impact of the ball.
All right. Stop standing around with your chips loose. Ooh, one of these here sudden Tennessee cyclones just passed us off. Now, help that catcher up on his feet. Hey, now, kid, pitch. And don't wait for freak windblast to help you.
They helped the stricken batter and give him a gentle shove. Got another catcher, put a pillow in his glove. Then young Satch went right back to the mound. He bent way, way back and brought the ball up from the ground.
Hey, it happened again. The catcher knocked out cold again.
Better knocked out by the breeze.
There's a cyclone around here. The weatherman should have warned us.
It wasn't no wind, Mr. Bailey.
Well, then he's got a cannon in his pocket.
He ain't even got a slingshot. This kid, they say, ain't human.
Every human's human.
Yeah, but we...
Set up another batter and catcher. We'll try one more time.
They set up the batters like 10 pins in a bowling alley. And he struck them down till the sun went down over Lookout Mountain. And the coach knew he'd won a team and had a player with the power of 22 men who could pitch like he wasn't quite exactly human. The players crowded around the wily old coach and told the catcher to analyze the pitch.
The coach says that me and you're going to work together, Mr. Page.
Yeah, we'll be working with you from now on, Mr. Page.
Call me Satchel, boys.
Well, what I was seeing is, your catcher, we've got to get to understand each other.
Sure.
A pitcher and a catcher's got to go along like a doctor and a nurse.
Sure.
Got to understand each other's signals.
Yes.
Now, if you don't mind telling me, seeing as I don't want your trade secrets, you understand, just want to know what I'm entitled to know.
Why, sure.
Then tell me, what kinds of ball do you pitch?
What kind?
Like, say, some pitchers got, a curveball,
yeah.
A knuckleball,
yeah.
A jump ball, drop ball, beanball, you see? Now, give me a list of the kind of balls you'll be pitching so as I can learn how to signal for them.
Well, I'll tell you about the balls I throw.
Yeah.
One is fast.
Yeah.
The other is faster. Well, the catcher, he looked up and he heard old Satchel say, maybe someday when I'm old and gray, there'll be other balls that I'll have to master. Now all I need is one that's fast and another one that's faster. He didn't have no curve and he didn't have no drop, just one blazing ball that the batter couldn't stop. Oh, Satchel, yes, oh, Satchel Paige, built to pitch in the atomic age. Lean as a greyhound and as tall as a tree, he was the pitcher of history. Oh, Satchel Paige.
They say they put him on that Tennessee team, put a uniform on his back, nailed spikes onto his 14s, and sent him pitching round the Southern Circuit. Umpires in New Orleans, Memphis, Houston, Birmingham, Atlanta, Jackson, Tallahassee, Macon watched his blazing pitches and put out their reports.
Strike three, batter's out!
Strike three, batter's out!
They say he had them all singing the same tune, week in and week out. Year in and year out. And they put up a poster that said,
Satchel Paige is pitching here tonight. Batters beware, hitters hide. Batters beware, hitters hide. Batters beware.
And people would come from miles around just to see him pitch. And he moved from team to team till he hit the town of Pittsburgh. And a guy named Gus Greenlee saw the gold dust dripping off his long, willowy right arm and called him in and asked him to sign a mighty odd contract.
You pitch your arm off in that Southern Circuit. Never get nowhere. I got a proposition.
What's your pitch?
Now, my team, the Pittsburgh Crawfords, lost the best batter in the country, Josh Gibson.
Josh Gibson?
Yeah, gone with the Homestead Grays. I need you because you pitch like he bats. Now, nobody ever seen you banged out of the box. With the kind of rep you're building up, you'll draw $100,000 a year.
Kind of like to meet this guy, Gibson.
Yeah, my advice. When you see him at bat, let some other sucker pitch. Now, you've been winning 49 out of 50 games. That proves you ain't human. Once you meet Josh...
I've never met a batter who couldn't strike out. Sooner or later.
If I have anything to say about it, you'll never meet this one. Play it safe. Let's barnstorm right.
He barnstormed all around the country with Josh Gibson on his mind. He went a mowing down batters like on an assembly line.
He frisked the lineups of 40 teams in 40 days, pitched shutouts, and in one game struck out 23 men, wept because the other four fouled out. Then they say young Satch went into Chicago to play a hot series game, and his manager stopped him in the dugout.
Satch?
Yeah?
The team we're playing's imported a special batter.
Yeah? I hope it don't hurt his feelings by striking him out.
I hope he don't hurt your reputation. That reputation's worth $100,000 a year to me. I can't afford to have it hurt.
Me neither. That's why I strike him out.
That special batter's Josh Gibson.
I've been waiting for him a long time.
They write songs about his hitting like they write songs about your pitching. You stay in the dugout. I'll put in a sub. I can't spoil your record.
What about his?
Yours is worth more.
Look, I never duck no batter. I ain't ducking this one. Let me loosen my arm up on this kind of hitter. I'll learn more.
I ain't letting you pitch this game.
It's either this game or no game.
All right. Go to the slaughter, little lamb.
He walked out on the field, headed toward the mound. Looked up in the bleachers, there was everyone in town. Why, the fans hung off the rafters, and the fans stood on the roof to see was Sage or Gibson best. See the naked proof. Josh Gibson, he was good, and he swung a heavy bat. And when he hit that ball, oh child, it wasn't no loving pat. Old Satchel, he leaned back to give the folks a show. And then he straightened up and let his lightning go.
Strike one!
Oh, Josh adjusted his cap, and he let out a long, long sigh as he watched that well-trained ball go zooming by. Satch wound up again to deliver another blow. Then something happened that hadn't happened before. Josh hit the ball, and you could hear it sing. Shot over the wall, just like it had some wings. Oh, Josh just went and crawled around the park, 'cause he knew they wouldn't find that ball till way, way after dark.
They say the long shutout record of the Satchel stopped, and the manager, who'd never quite believe young Satch was human, called him aside and said,
"You ain't the phenomenon I've been advertising. How you explain it?"
"Well, it just proves that I'm human."
They say the next time he pitched to old Josh Gibson, it was in a park in Chicago. He let three men get on base just to get to killer Gibson. When he came up to the plate, Satch called out to him,
"Hey, Josh!
Hey, Satch!
I'm striking you out with three straight balls.
Ain't no man that's human can do that to me.
The first one will be fast.
Strike one!
The next one's fast.
Strike two!
This one's faster.
Strike three!
And bedlam broke out in the boxes like measles. The crowd threw so many straw hats out on the field, it took 20 attendants 2 hours to clear them away. 10 cops beat back the congratulators. 2 doctors fixed Satch's hand bones he'd broke through handshaking. And he went traveling on and pitched against the big league batters in all-star games. He caught Hack Wilson in Pasadena, struck him out 6 times straight. In Chicago, he sought out Babe Herman, but Babe never got to first base. Ted Williams swung out like a blind man in Brooklyn. He cut down Lloyd Wehner in Pittsburgh and struck out Joe DiMaggio in San Diego, dueled with Dizzy Dean up and down the West Coast, and took him 11 games out of 12. Picked out a kid named Bob Feller in Iowa, taught him every trick in the trade, and sent him up to the majors. And one pre-war year, Satchel knocked at the gates of the major leagues. But the scout shook a sad head.
If you would have been with the Cubs, the Sox, the Senators,
You could have won many a pennant for them. And some of them teams ain't seen no part of a pennant in years. But they still won't take you. People keep pushing against the Jim Crow door. It'll crack wide open one of these days. I hope you'll still be around.
The scouts kept a-coming. The scouts kept a-scouting. Not a single one, not a single one was doubting. Into the major leagues, old Satch would go. Once they got rid of that guy called Jim Crow.
And he kept traveling the circuit of the Negro League. Played with the Baltimore Black Barons, the Cleveland Brown Bears, Nashville Elite Giants, and the Kansas City Monarchs. Got so good, the touts followed him around the country and gave guarantees that sounded like fables.
The great Baton Page is sitting inside this park, folks. I'll bet you 4-1 he's a guarantee to strike out the first three batters.
First three?
That's right, that's right.
And he'd look back over his shoulder and see that the first inning was over and the three batters had already swung out like rusty gates, and he'd call out.
Oh, did I say the first three batters? That's right. 5-1, that's a guarantee to strike out the first six.
And then Satchel sent down the next three. The touters would hear the ump's report. And increase the guarantee.
Did I say the first six? I'll guarantee he'll strike out the first nine. Guaranteed, folks. A gilt edge guarantee. Get your tickets right here. Guaranteed to strike out nine men.
They say he kept traveling and the guarantees kept growing. One season in Iowa, he struck out so many men, the outfielders were scared they'd be jailed for vagrancy, loitering around the ballparks with nothing to do. He pitched north in the summer, south in the winters, Latin America in the falls. He pitched all season, and his seasons lasted 12 months straight. And one winter season, on a ball field high in the hills of Mexico City, he was practicing some new pitches while his coach speculated.
Yeah, changing your whole style of pitching, huh?
Yeah. Think of ease up on the speedball. Throwing curves, drops, and a few foolers.
Yeah?
Curves like this. Oh. Only it won't curve.
Looks all right to me.
Funny, I didn't have no trouble curving it back in the States.
Hey, watch your arm. You've been curving that ball for hours. Maybe it's the air.
I ain't stopping till I get it to curve like a corkscrew.
It was way up on the mountain, up on the mountain high. He couldn't throw a curveball, no matter how hard he tried.
Satch woke up one Mexican morning, couldn't lift his arm to scratch his head. His trusty pitching arm seemed just like a piece of lead.
All right, Doc. You've been studying my x-rays all day. Now, what's wrong with my arm?
It is hard to explain.
Can I pitch again?
Never. Here's what has happened. Many American ball players make the same mistake. I'm no baseball expert, but, well...
It's all right, Doc. Pitch it.
Well, apparently, it takes a certain density of air to make a curveball curve. That is, the spin on the curveball sets up a counter-reaction in the air, which sometimes causes it to waver somewhat. Is that it?
Keep on.
Well, then, naturally, when the air is thin, as up in the Mexican mountains, a pitcher can throw his arm off trying to set up air reaction. Nothing will happen, except it can ruin, dislocate the important parts of the body. In yours, an infection has set in. I advise, Senor Page, rest. Plenty of rest.
I can't get up on that mound again?
If you do not want them to bury you under it, stay off it.
Oh, hang up your glove. Forget the itch to pitch. If you don't want to be buried deep in a grave digger's ditch.
Old Satchel listened, and he sat stone still. But he made up his mind to do the doctor's will.
I'll go join the Monarchs down in Kansas City. I'll just be a coach, you know, and boys, that's a pity, for that'll be the end of me. Yes, that'll be the end of me. Of all statues, all statue page.
They say Batters come out a-hiding from Houston to Honolulu and had a field day. They say pitchers from Pittsburgh to Panama went in mourning as Satch went coaching for the Monarchs. And for a long time, nobody could make his long, lean fingers touch a ball. Nobody except the boys he visited one day in a hospital ward in San Diego. They'd just come from Okinawa. They'd asked the government to send Satchel Paige round, and he came.
They sent him to the soldiers to bring them good cheer. But when they heard he quit the game, they wept for many a tear. One soldier said, "Mr. Paige, I've heard of you since I was a child. I wanted to come home and see you make them batters swing wild. Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel Paige, you was the best darn pitcher that the good Lord ever made. Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel Paige, please pitch once more," some soldier said. "All right, said Satchel, I'll do it, even if it kills me dead. Hey, Satchel, hey, Satchel Paige."
He went back to the ballpark where the Monarchs were playing, walked out on the field past the coach and the players, and bet his life saving he'd strike out the first nine men. They say the crowd got quiet when he stepped on the mound. One leg shot up and tipped the sky, and the other held firm to the ground. And he must have thrown his blazer ball, cause there was that whistling sound.
Strike one!
There were curves, sidearms, overhands, underarms. There were bat jumpers and leap balls, bloopers and loopers, drops and dodges. Paige was pitching.
Ooh, we are the ball that'll split the heart of a dime. I'll pitch and pitch and pitch, and I ain't gonna stop this time. I'll pitch the balls I'll see for my old age. Said, "Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel Paige."
They say he wound up like the first day he pointed his 14s toward Tennessee 25 years back. They say the batters and hard hitters went back into hiding. The doctor shook their heads and gave him up for dead. But he kept pitching round his 12-month season. And one evening in Cleveland, Bill Veeck and Lou Boudreau stood by while he threw 50 pitches to a batter.
"That's enough. 46 strikes out of a possible 50. If you're ready to sign, that puts you on the Cleveland Indians team."
"I've been ready a long, long time."
"Yeah, I know. Too bad they can't see Satchel Paige the way I used to see you when I was a kid. Slinging only those two kinds of pitches. Fast one and a faster one. Jim Crow's cheated sports fans out of a fabulous time. You still got enough, more than enough, to show them what they could have seen if they'd stopped segregation in baseball from the start. How about getting into uniform?"
"True, you may not pitch like you used to at all, but you still got plenty of juice on the ball. Now look here, folks, I'm getting ready to go, cause the rest of my story you all just about know. How with Dobie Gordon, Keltner, and that hustling Lou Boudreau, the Indians won the pennant, and old Satchel steal the show. If you don't believe my stories, the sure enough gospel true, goes to show baseball legend, just amen for you. In front of him, fame was always a dangling. It came mighty late for Satchel the gangling. Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel Paige, the greatest pitcher that my good Lord ever made. Oh, Satchel, oh, Satchel. to pay.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of the Cleveland Indians pitcher Satchel Paige. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Satchel Paige was played by Harris Gaines. The balladeer was Oscar Brown, Jr. Others were Dean Almquist, Harvey Hayes, Ted Liss, Tony Parrish, and Fred Pinkard. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen, Jose Bethencourt, and Lou Kessler. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Benjamin Banneker, Negro inventor and surveyor.
My apologies on my show preparations. That was episode 45 of Destination Freedom, The Ballad of Satchel Paige, with an original air date of the 15th of May, 1949. That was off of WMAQ in Chicago, not Detroit. I kind of got it confused. I was trying to look back on my previous show notes, because Destination Freedom was created and written by Richard Durham, and it did feature an all-black ensemble cast. I have played The Ballad of Satchel Paige on the Grand Hour previously. I have no problems playing it again, especially since it's in commemoration of Black History Month, as well as spring training has begun, so baseball's here. I believe Satchel Paige, he most noted for his tenure with the Kansas City Monarchs and the Negro Leagues. And as dominant as he was, I actually was reading that Rube Foster was either as equally dominant or more dominant in the early part of the 20th century. But that's what the lore of baseball is about. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. Thanks for listening.
COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.